Bill Flores joins us from D.C. this morning. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you on WTAW.
Let's talk for a minute because folks from our chamber are up there. It's a busy three-day trip for them. You've got, I guess one of the neat things is basically you put them in a room today and the lawmakers and policymakers come to them.
Yeah, and they're going to have a great day today. They're going to see a bunch of movers and shakers. Both our senators are going to show up. We're going to have Eric Cantor, the majority leader. We'll also have Kevin McCarthy, the whip. And then we've got several committee chairmen and subcommittee chairmen. So I think they're going to have an action-packed and information-filled day.
Now, select committee has been big talk as far as Benghazi is concerned. Panel will be 7 Republicans and 5 Democrats. That's not sitting well with Nancy Pelosi, I see.
Well, under the way the rules work in the House, the majority gets to always have the majority of every committee, and so I don't know why she's decided that she needs to change the rules for this purpose. But Speaker Boehner is just following the rules that we have in the House with respect to setting the committee allocations.
Now, one of the things that she mentioned is that they'll have some discussion today whether or not the Democrats will even participate in the panel. Your thoughts there?
Well, that's really kind of childish behavior to not participate. If she thinks this is that important that they would want to slow it down or stop it, then they ought to participate. She always amazes me with the things that she comes up with to get in a fight about.
Now, John Kerry has said yesterday, I think, that he will comply with any of the requests that select committee comes up with, but basically he's saying there's just not any new news.
Well, I hope he complies with the request. I mean, the reason we have the select committee, the reason this all came about is because the administration did not comply with our request for information. They did not comply with our subpoenas, and the smoking gun memo was withheld. And, you know, a court ordered it to be produced to a third-party group. And then when that came out, that showed that the White House was really covering this up. And we would not be talking about select committees if the White House had complied with the constitutional duties that Congress has under our Constitution.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. this morning. So you've got that select committee that's being discussed. This is a busy week as far as investigations are concerned.
It is. So we've got the select committee, and then we, Lois Lerner, we've got a vote on whether or not to hold her in contempt. If I were in Lois Lerner's shoes, I would come over and start having a discussion with Congress and be candid. She's trying to hide behind her Fifth Amendment rights. The problem is, in her opening statement, she made 17 assertions about what she had or had not done when she was in charge of parts of the IRS. You can't do that. She essentially waived her right to the Fifth Amendment protection when she made that opening statement, including those 17 assertions. So if I were her, I'd come talk, but I doubt if she will, and so we'll probably hold her, not probably, we will hold her in contempt this week.
That is something that you will vote for?
But yes, sir, absolutely.
Got it.
As well as voting for the select committee.
Of course, you're on the Veterans Affairs Committee, and yesterday the president said that he is supporting the Veteran Affairs Secretary, Eric Shinseki. I'd like to get your thoughts there.
Well, I have mixed emotions about this particular issue. I am willing to support Secretary Shinseki, as I have in the past, but only for a limited period of time. There are issues at the VA, the nation's second largest bureaucracy, that we have pointed out to him time and time and time again. And we've asked him to please begin to exercise his position as Secretary of the VA to start firing people that don't perform. This is not new stuff. Bob Gates did this, and we saw him do it when he took over the Department of Defense, the Secretary of Defense. Shinseki needs to do the same thing. If he doesn't, then I will be like several other people, and I will call for his resignation. My hope is that he'll get the picture, and he'll begin to try to put veterans first instead of bureaucrats first.
Bill Flores joining us from Washington, D.C. this morning. Kind of behind the scenes a little bit, but it appears that Kevin Brady, who was at one time our congressman and represents up in Montgomery County and that area, may in fact look to become chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. Paul Ryan is there now. I'd like to get your thoughts on that.
Well, both Kevin Brady and Paul Ryan are on the Ways and Means Committee today, and Dave Camp, our current chairman, is going to be term limited at the end of this year. And so Kevin and Paul are vying for the chairmanship of Ways and Means, which, of course, is one of our most powerful committees in the United States House. So it'll be interesting to watch the contest between the two of these gentlemen. Paul Ryan is currently the Budget Committee Chairman, and Kevin has the most seniority on Ways and Means on the GOP side. So it'll be interesting to watch how it comes out.
That's all you want to say, huh?
Yeah, that's all I want to say. I tell you what, they're both great members of the Ways and Means Committee, both great members of Congress, and I like both of them. We as Texans tend to support our fellow Texans when it comes to chairmanships. But, you know, you can't lose with Paul Ryan either. So it's one of those situations where you know, let's put it this way. The nation is going to be well off with either of those men as Ways and Means chairman.
Yesterday, some major health insurance companies gave some numbers that looked pretty promising as far as people who are actually paying for their affordable health care plan. The head of Aetna said that they were in the mid-80s, 80% range or so. That's a pretty good number, and I don't think that's what Republicans actually were expecting to get from Americans actually paying for their health insurance.
Well, I thought it would be a little lower number, but if I were in business and only had 80 or 85% of the people paying their bills, to me as the business person, I wouldn't find that to be an incredibly promising statistic.
I wish I had 80% of Americans paying taxes right now, but then that's another
issue. Well, that's another issue. But, think about it. If you ran a business and only 85% of your customers paid you, I don't know. That's just not a very good model.
Well, I understand that, and there's certainly a chance that it may not end well, but at least right now I guess it's a little more hopeful than we thought. I'd like to talk just for a minute about the Federal Highway Fund, because there was some discussion in the news about that last week. This is a lot of money that a lot of states have depended on in the past, and it's supposed to be for infrastructure. They've been doing this since 1956, but as it stands right now, that money is going to dry up. Can you tell me what it looks like the future will be for the Federal Highway Fund?
Well, I don't know at this point the direction that we're going to go. The gas tax has been woefully short of funding the amounts that are needed to keep our highway infrastructure in place. That's the first problem. The second problem is that the federal government has historically begun to expand the use of the Highway Trust Fund for parks and bike trails and mass transit and things like that. In the last highway bill that we passed in Congress about a year and a half ago, we greatly slimmed down the percentage that could be used for non-highway projects. We simplified the process for getting highways built. But still, the key issue is the gas tax is not enough. I have a lot of people come up to town say we need to raise the gas tax. And I say I think what we need to do is look at a new form of taxation or a new form of revenue generation to be able to deal with the Highway Trust Fund, because it is going to go broke this year. And over the past several years, the deficit for the Highway Trust Fund has been funded out of general revenue. I don't think that's a workable model that Americans are comfortable with today, so we're going to have to do something different.
Finally today, they hold it every year in Houston. It's the Offshore Technology Conference, and you spoke there yesterday. And, of course, folks know you have a background in the energy industry. And in the meeting that you were in and spoke to, they had oil and gas executives respond to the question, what should be the priority for technology innovation? And the result was for these oil and gas leaders to say, develop alternatives to oil and gas. So what do you think about that?
Well, it wasn't what the oil and gas companies should do. It's what we as the country should do.
Okay.
To address long-term energy needs. And so, you know, they weren't saying the oil and gas companies had to come develop the technology, but we as an American society, and actually I guess you look at the global economy, needs to use technology to develop alternative sources. So it really wasn't a surprise to me. The second highest vote getter, though, was to use technology to expand production of domestic resources.
Now, what's your feeling as far as nuclear energy is concerned?
I am very pro-nuclear. To me, nuclear energy is the ultimate green fuel. If we want to have a low carbon emissions environment, we need to produce about 80% of our baseload electricity from nuclear. Now, the environmental community usually freaks out about nuclear, but there are a leading group of environmentalists that have begun to see the promise of nuclear, and they produced a film called Pandora's Promise. And I would recommend that people take a look at it because it reflects my feelings about nuclear. And I think that it's the direction we need to do what France did during the first set of oil shocks back in the 70s. And that is to move away from using carbon fuels for the production of electricity.
Well,
but I'd say do it over a long period of time. In other words, have a licensing structure so that you license and build new nuclear plants as coal-fired plants are dropping or getting to the ends of their respective useful lives. That way you don't have a big disruption in jobs or in the investments that companies have made. But you do have a path toward cleaning up emissions.
That'll be interesting to watch. The phrase nuclear accident still scares people. That's
yeah,
sure.
But if I wish people would go look at this film, Pandora's Promise, because it really does set the record straight in terms of what really happened at Chernobyl and at Fukushima and at Three Mile Island.
Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning, Bill.
Yes, sir. Good talk to you. I'd ask our listeners continue praying for our troops, our military, and our first responders.